Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. As always, we start with today's top stories. The first headline reads, "It's actually just a large photo, front page and center. It's called Stories of the Season, Daily Bread Soup Kitchen. Santa's helpers." And there's a picture of three women kind of dressed in, you know, like Christmassy holiday type kind of sweatshirts, and they are putting food items into bags. The caption reads, "Volunteers Patty McKinney and Gabe Wilson choose items to pack in a knapsack Monday as part of the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen's annual winter giveaway. The knapsack is just one of hundreds, each stuffed to the brim with Christmas goodies like snacks and card games and winter necessities like gloves and scarves, plus toiletries folks might need year-round. Most of the bags they filled are meant for adult men and women, the soup kitchen's main visitors, but volunteers have started putting together bags for children by popular request. By the last day they were collecting donations from the community, volunteers were getting pretty efficient. They packed around 120 bags in just a few hours. Much of the process is completed in secret, though, to preserve the surprise of which day the bags will be gifted to visitors." I think that photo and caption is provided by Luke Taylor of the News Gazette. Next up, Champaign County Courthouse. Repeat offender receives one more chance. This article is written by Luke Taylor for the News Gazette and is based out of Urbana. In a decision that came as a surprise, even to the judge himself, an Urbana man who admitted to burglary in an April incident has been given another chance at avoiding prison time. Dion Williams, D-E-I-O-N Williams, 29, pleaded guilty to burglary in October in the incident in which prosecutors said he broke into his ex-girlfriend's apartment, resulting in an argument escalated into a fight. In exchange for the plea, they dropped charges of domestic battery, home invasion, and violating an order of protection. On Monday, Weber sentenced him to 3 years of probation. I guess that's Judge Weber, W-E-B-B-E-R, sentenced him to 3 years of probation and 150 days in prison, with credit for 235 days already served as he awaited court dates. Williams also has a juvenile and adult criminal history, which has led him to be put on probation seven other times. He also previously served time in prison and was released in 2020. As his defense lawyer and judge, Roger Weber, highlighted, Williams did not deny his behavior, only explaining that he had been high on some kind of pills that night and does not recall everything clearly. The only detail of the police's investigation and his ex-girlfriend's story that Williams contested was that he broke in through a window. He said that he was let in through the door. Weber said that after reading the details of the case and Williams' record, he had already partly made up his mind about the sentence. "I walked into this hearing thinking that the only decision I was going to make was what number between 3 and 14 was the number of years that I was going to send you to the Department of Corrections," Weber said. He had already read the 10 letters of recommendation sent in support of releasing Williams to a community-based sentence at that point. But it was the testimonies he heard in court Monday from Williams, his father, and a local pastor that changed his mind. "I've heard testimony from people who are candid with me. They didn't come in here and make excuses for you," Weber said. "They acknowledge the problems that you face and agree to work hard to keep you in line, to help you go down the path that you must go down." Williams' birth father is out of the picture, and his birth mother was a drug user. While he had some contact with her, he has been raised by his adoptive parents since he was only a few months old. His father testified that from the beginning, he and his wife were aware that they would have problems due to Williams' birth mother's drug use. Since Williams's 2020 release, he said his son has been working hard to be a better person despite being the victim of a shooting in 2022. Williams's father said he had considered his son might be dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, from the shooting, but that medical professionals hadn't said anything to him about it. Defense lawyer Ed Perano asked if the parents would be willing and able to help their son pursue treatment for drug abuse and maintain his probation. "Yes, he's my son," Williams' father said. "He doesn't stop being our son." An area pastor who has previously mentored Williams testified as well, saying he would be willing to help out. The pastor suggested this probation would be different from previous attempts, partly because of his own involvement, but also because Williams is getting older. In laying out his decision, Weber referenced the way that Perano and witnesses referred to Williams as being young or a kid throughout the hearing, and quoted a Bible verse that says it is time to put away childish things as an adult. "It is past time for that to happen to you," Weber told Williams. He highlighted how Williams did not ask for a second chance, but for another chance, perhaps demonstrating he understood that he had been given several opportunities already. Prosecutors recommended 8 years in prison, which could have been offset by good behavior. If Williams violates his probation, he could be facing the full 14 years applicable to his crime with potentially different standards. Near the end of the hearing, Weber gave Williams one final message: "Don't make me look bad for giving you this chance." Next up, Rantoul Township High School. Building expanding to meet higher enrollment. Project funded by money already on hand, officials say. This article is written by Dave Hinton and is based out of Rantoul. Contractors are in the midst of a $5 million project that will expand and renovate a portion of Rantoul Township High School. The school is growing building-wise and enrollment-wise. The construction involves enlarging the gym lobby, elevator installation, and adding to the north end of the building, including the addition of a second level. "We're bringing the building out about another 15 to 20 feet," Superintendent Scott Amerio said. "Then we're going to put a second level on that part and the current hallway that connects the gym lobby to the east wing. All of the additional first-hand second floor area will be for office space. Currently, many of the district's support personnel, including social workers and psychologists, use room 200. They will move to the new section, and room 200 will be made into a classroom. On Monday, a crew was erecting the walls of the area that will be the office space for school support personnel and instructional coaches. The gym lobby will be expanded about 25 feet. That area will include the foyer area, concession stand, and ticket booth. The new elevator will reach all three levels of the school. In phase one of the high school work done in the summer of 2023, bathrooms were renovated, more bathrooms added upstairs, and new flooring installed. The cost for both phases of the work totals a little more than $7 million. Amerio said not to fret taxpayers, it won't mean a property tax increase. "We've been able to budget our sales tax money and some other state funding to help with the cost of this," Amerio said. "The good thing for the taxpayers is we didn't have to ask for money for this. Hopefully we will get everything enclosed here pretty soon before the weather turns colder. The work is targeted for completion in the spring. Remodeling of the student services area, however, will not begin until the summer of 2025, with the completion goal at the end of August. The expansion is necessary in part because the high school has seen enrollment climb to more than 900 students. We've been around 840 for the past couple of years." That's 840 students, Amerio said. "We didn't really see this jumping this much. It's a good problem to have." And there's one photo of the exterior of the high school with some construction going on. The caption reads, "A construction crew puts up the walls for what will be office space for school support personnel and instructional coaches on the north side of Rantoul Township High School." And that photograph is provided by Dave Hinton of the News Gazette. Next up, from Bob Asmussen, picture this. Artist Mango M-A-N-G-O, Painting, Unique Portraits of Illini Greats. This story is based out of New York and is written by columnist Bob Asmussen. Rob Mango, M-A-N-G-O, had a vision and a receptive audience. The former University of Illinois track standout, now a renowned artist, wanted to create pieces dedicated to his alma mater. In November, Manhattan-based Mango met with U of I athletic director Josh Whitman, this past November, and his wife, Hope. Mango had gotten to know Hope because of their shared interest in art. Mango's idea, paintings of Illini Olympians. 5 years ago, Mango painted the stunning portrait of Illini track coaching great Gary Wynicke. It hangs in the Demersian Park track complex. Whitman approved the Olympian idea and suggested Illini legends be included in the project. Next up is a painting of Illini Tonya Buford Bailey, who was a bronze medalist in the 400-meter hurdles at the 1996 Atlanta Olympics. This painting is going to be a rather dynamic picture, Mango said. Dynamic in a sense of movement. It's going to have more Mango style than probably anybody expects. It's going to have a likeness factor. The air around it expresses the dynamism of movement. One unique feature of the painting, it will be two- and three-dimensional. It's going to be all about the physics of motion, Mango said. Her lead leg is three-dimensional coming off the canvas. Her trail leg is inside the canvas. Unique and striking. I had to make a picture that is so compelling, Mango said. All the chemistry is here. I just have to make magic now. The Buford Bailey painting is the first in a series Mango plans of Illini greats. He is also painting football legend Red Grange and golfing great Steve Stricker. Where will the paintings hang? To be determined by Whitman and the school. The 73-year-old Mango isn't stopping with the first three. I'd like to do five a year, Mango said. This will be a treasure for the athletic department, but it's something that every student is going to want to see. Allowing access to a wide audience is important to Mango. There's nothing like this anywhere in the United States of America. A university has original works of art of selected Olympians and legends done by one of the university's former athletes. Audiences of today, Mango said, have been spoiled by fantastic media, special effects, and blockbuster films. Mango's goal is to force the audience to stop and soak in what's in front of them. Don't quickly swipe to the next screen. Instead, linger and absorb. When they walk in the room, they're not going to be able to systemize and flip through the pictures, he said. See each one as a unique work of art unto itself. By that, I mean unique technique-wise and unique in the presentation of each athlete. The work is being tied together by the likeness. Somebody who knows the athlete is going to walk in and recognize them, Mango said. Somebody who doesn't know them is going to find out what they actually look like. That's my goal. Fresh take. Mango already knows what the Grange piece will look like. I'm going to do this brooding portrait of Red Grange, Mango said. You're going to see why this guy was unstoppable in his face. Painting football players is appealing to Mango. No sport has a bigger audience than the NFL. Doubtless, the Chicago Bears will be interested in the work depicting one of their stars. Mango has painted subjects like Grange from the past. Yes, he did 15 silent screen stars and Olympian Johnny Weissmuller, who later played Tarzan in films. Origin story. Mango grew up in the Chicago area, born on the north side, but learned to run on the south side. He graduated from Tinley Park High School before attending Illinois. All his free time while in high school was spent at the Art Institute of Chicago. I roamed those halls and I copied the masters, he said. They had the greatest impressionist collection probably in America. I had a weird photographic memory for these things. I could look at them and go home and paint them. Art was always part of his life. He started in track as a sprinter, but was recruited to Illinois to run the 400. Nationally, if I wanted to continue to win, I was going to have to move to the half mile, which I did my junior year, Mango said. Wynicke was an expert in the half mile, helping develop a string of champions. They were close, which is evident from the painting Mango did of his former coach. He let me be me, Mango said. He never told me how to live my life, never told me how to run a race. He just trained me based on what was best for me as a runner and a personality-wise also. Mango studied industrial design as an undergrad and got a graduate degree in sculpture. He had a one-man show in Chicago the day he graduated from Illinois. Making a living in art in Chicago turned out to be a little tougher, Mango said. He turned to teaching, working at Loyola University. In 1977, he moved to New York, which is what serious artists do. Today, Mango is a young 73, staying in shape by running 5 to 6 days a week on artificial knees. He returns to the Illinois campus as often as possible, reuniting with track buddies from the team. They were here in October. He will be back for the Wynicke meet in May. Mango and wife Helen have been married 40 years. They are the parents of Magdalena and Joe, and they have 5 grandkids. Mango has a studio on the Delaware River and a studio and gallery in Tribeca. Bob Asmussen is a college football reporter and columnist for the News Gazette. He can be reached by phone or email at 217-393-8248. That's 217-393-8248. Or his email address is Asmussen, A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N, at newsgazette.com. And there's 2 photographs that accompany this article. One is of a man standing between 2 large paintings talking to another man. The caption reads, "In 2019, artist Rob Mango, on the left, shows off his work to former University of Illinois track coach Gary Wynicke in Champaign." That photo is provided by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. And Rob Mango also provides a sketch of a runner going over a hurdle. The caption reads, "Rob Mango's sketch of University of Illinois track great Tonya Buford Bailey is being turned into a painting by the New York artist. Mango is a former Illinois track standout." And that's provided by Rob Mango. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. A few weeks ago, Atwood's Samantha Binion pitched an idea to her mom and neighbor. Wouldn't it be fun to put a 12-foot inflatable Santa in our yard? Mom was all for it, so Samantha took it a step further, asking the same question to fellow residents along Main Street. "I thought it'd bring people joy," she said. Surprisingly, everyone said yes. Today, there are more than 30 giant illuminated Santas in front yards around town, resulting in an increase in both traffic, a good thing, and holiday spirit in this tiny village splitting Douglas and Piatt counties. Amazon and festive neighbors made it possible. "At night, you see so many people driving through slowly so they can look," Samantha said. "It's hilarious and joyful that there are so many Santas in town. There's almost a new one every day." Samantha, a 6th grade teacher at Atwood Hammond Grade School, even created 2 scavenger hunts tied to the inflatables. A native of Atwood, she isn't surprised one bit by the overwhelmingly positive response. "Atwood has always been a fun community," Samantha said. "This is just the beginning. Maybe next year Santa will get a reindeer friend. The sky's the limit." And there's a photo of a very large Santa in the front yard of a home, and that's provided. Next up, history. Area history. In 1924, the strike of Illinois traction system trainmen entered its 4th day with the latest effort to bring peace, a failure. Overtime for work after 10 hours now is the chief issue, and company officials assert they're willing to arbitrate the question if the men first will return to work. The men refuse. In 1974, University of Illinois officials said Chicago Sun-Times charges of misuse of university funds for the Levis Faculty Center are misleading, and all university subsidies of the center are open and above board. The Sun-Times reported that the university has spent at least $100,000 or $150,000 over the past 2 years to subsidize the center for its operation and maintenance costs. In 2009, the investigation into the shooting death of Kwani Carrington by a Champaign police officer will be reviewed by federal authorities. Champaign Police Chief R.T. Finney asked the U.S. Department of Justice to review the circumstances surrounding the October 9th shooting of the Champaign teen by Officer Daniel Norbitz. In international history, today's highlight: on December 10th, 1906, President Theodore Roosevelt became the first American to win a Nobel Prize, winning the Nobel Peace Prize for helping to negotiate peace in the Russo-Japanese War. Also on this date, in 1861, the Confederacy admitted Kentucky as it recognized a pro-Southern shadow state government that was acting without the authority of the pro-Union government in Frankfort. And in 1967, singer Otis Redding, 26, and six others were killed when their plane crashed into Wisconsin's Lake Monona. Trumpeter Ben Colley, a member of the group the Barcays, was the only survivor. The next headline reads, Mahomet Plan and Zoning Commission permit for solar development on agenda. This article is written by Jana Wiersema, and it's based out of Mahomet. Village officials will soon consider what may be the first large-scale commercial solar project proposed near Mahomet. Rewild Renewables is requesting a conditional use permit to create a solar farm on undeveloped agricultural land in Hensley Township adjacent to village limits. The approximately 87-acre site is on the south side of County Road 2175 North, about 2,500 feet west of County Road 750 East. Village planner Abby Heckman said this is the first conditional use permit application staff have processed for a large-scale ground-mounted solar project. We did have a conditional use for a commercial site that was looking to offset their existing electric use, she said. But this would be the first time we've had that's more of a community solar project that just feeds the grid instead of offsetting specific site use. The Mahomet Plan and Zoning Commission will vote at its 6 p.m. Wednesday meeting on whether to send a favorable recommendation on the matter to the Village Board, which makes the final decision on conditional use permits. The application was filed by County Road 2175 North Solar LLC. According to business records, the two managers for the Limited Liability Corporation are Patrick Jackson and Robert Lambert, who are both part of the leadership team at Rewild Renewables. Rewild is an employee-owned company that develops solar energy projects while also using these projects to support environmental conservation. The proposed project in Hensley Township will be built on roughly 40 acres within the 87-acre site, with construction projected to start as soon as late summer 2025, according to documents included in the application. The subject property is owned by local lawyer Andrew Hatch. Seth Wabel, the farm manager for Hatch, said that the plan is to lease the land to Rewild for 20 years. The site is currently used for corn and soybean production. Wabel added that, assuming the permit is approved, the remaining acreage not used by or for the solar development would continue to be used for agricultural purposes. While Mahomet officials have previously expressed concern about solar farm potentially impeding the village's future growth, Heckman said village staff believe this is not a concern for this particular subject property. We do have an idea where our growth areas are, and this site is well outside of that, she said. Heckman wrote in a report to the commission that the land is identified by the comprehensive plan as part of the village's rural growth area, which discourages unnecessary extension of infrastructure and substantial residential development until vacant and or underutilized properties currently within the village limits are developed. Village staff recommend that if the commission finds the proposed use reasonable, the permit should include several conditions, including that the property owner must submit a petition for voluntary annexation within 6 months of the village board approving the conditional use permit, or else the permit will become void. Another proposed condition states that the permit would become void if construction has not begun within 1 year after the conditional use is approved, unless the applicant requests a 1 year extension before the expiration date and can show that there is a good cause for the request, Heckman wrote. The village board has sole discretion on whether to approve the annexation. In addition to the local processes the applicant must go through, Heckman noted that there are also state laws and other building code requirements that apply to this kind of development. The next headline reads, Danville Police, arrest made in fatal shooting. This is collectively written by the News Gazette and is based out of Danville. An arrest has been made after a Sunday afternoon shooting left a Danville man dead. Vermilion County Sheriff's deputies were called at about 3:30 p.m. to the 1300 block of 2nd Avenue for a shooting. They discovered a 38-year-old male with a gunshot wound. He was pronounced dead at the scene. The victim was later identified by Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden as Eric C. Bell of Danville. His family has been notified and an autopsy is scheduled for later today. Deputies developed a suspect and a vehicle in the course of their investigation, and a Danville police officer located the vehicle traveling north on Bowman Avenue. The officer performed a traffic stop and took Tyrone Watkins, 45, into custody. He has been charged with first-degree murder. The investigation is ongoing by the Sheriff's Department, Illinois State Police, and the coroner. Next up, let's take a look at our weather forecast over the next few days. Today, 39 degrees. One moment. Partly sunny. Northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Overnight, becoming partly cloudy. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. As we get into the week, it will be a little bit colder. Wednesday, the high will be 31, the low is 23 degrees, partly sunny, a 50% chance of afternoon snow showers. West winds 15 to 20 miles per hour, gusts of wind up to 30 miles per hour, overnight mostly clear and cold, so tomorrow, chance of snow. Thursday, the high will be a cold 23, the low is 10, mostly sunny, wind chill values as low as 5 below in the morning. Stay warm. Friday, it warms up to a high of 41, a low of 18, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of rain in the afternoon, and Saturday, similar weather. The high is 42, the low is 34, and rain is 70% likely. Stories written in this News Gazette contain original reporting by the News Gazette staff. If you are not a subscriber, please consider becoming one, because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making all reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us continue to connect. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. As always, it's a pleasure to read with you. Thank you for listening. I'll be back with part two of the News Gazette for today shortly, so please stay with me. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful and warm week ahead.